you hear a lot of people say, we've all heard that cliche, find something you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life. The only people that say that are rich. Poor people don't say that. That is something that those, that is a saying that someone that is already wealthy says. So my advice to people is find what you're good at and get someone to pay you to do it. If you look at the number of hunting licenses sold in the state of Pennsylvania, it's a million. It's just over a million. Okay. Do you know how many of those hunting license holders aren't registered to vote? 614,000. Why do you think most people aren't registered to vote? This is going to blow you away. They're scared of getting jury duty. It's crazy. They think they'll get in trouble or something. I'm 48 years old. I've had jury duty once in my life. So that's one of those things. That's like, that's something that we have to work on as a community is we need, if you want to protect hunting, fishing, the Second Amendment, you have to be a participant in the process. The day after I killed that big elk at the Hill Ranch, I shot a 400-pound color-faced black bear. That was not easy, and that was very challenging and very scary at the same time. So, you know, just because one thing at a ranch is super easy doesn't mean like the next thing at a game ranch or a private ranch is going to be super easy. So,
hey guys, welcome to 2024. Thank you for all the years of support. Been at this a long time, and appreciate you sticking with me. And if you're a new listener, thank you for tuning in. If you could help me out by going to iTunes or Spotify and leaving us a review, really appreciate it. Helps me keep this free. Speaking of keeping this free, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code John Stallone to save 20% on everything that they have. And lastly, if you could, do yourself a favor, help protect hunting, help protect your heritage, and get involved with Howl for Wildlife. That's Howl, H-O-W-L, for wildlife.org. Go check it out, get involved. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to talk with Baker Levitt. And he's going to share with us a couple cool stories, and maybe we'll pick his brain about a couple things. We'll see how it goes. What's going on, man? How are you doing?
How are you, man? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you. Thanks for being on it. I'm good. Just been going a little crazy lately. Just got a lot of irons in the fire, both business and dealing with Howl for Wildlife stuff. And you and I were talking, chatting about it. Couple of seconds here before I hit the record button, but some craziness going on in Wyoming with this guy in Wyoming that got a $250 fine for basically torturing a wolf. He brought a wolf into a bar and taped its mouth shut, and it was just a screwed up situation, man.
So what exactly happened? Like, he hit the wolf with his vehicle,
right? So this is basically
the wolf.
Yeah, basically what happened is he was supposedly in this, Wyoming has this predator zone, which in the predator zone, all the predators in there are considered vermin. So there is no prescribed method of take. You can run them over with a truck if you wanted to, or you can bludgeon them to death if you wanted to, which is, it's not a good thing. And I don't know why it's so liberal in the method of how you take it, but that's how the law reads there. Anyway, so supposedly he ran it over with his snowmobile, and then he taped its mouth shut and brought it into the bar, took pictures with it, and yada, yada, yada. And it's kind of gained some national news. And, the crazy thing about it is I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm just going to shoot some arbitrary numbers out there. But I think, I mean, from what I've seen, it's well into the 90% of people are like appalled by it, where, you know, in the hunting community. But there is a small sector of people that are not only appalled about it, but are upset. One, Howl for Wildlife took a official stance on it, that we were appalled about it, and we wanted to see some laws, and we want to be part of helping draft those laws so they don't get, you know, out of hand, and you know, we don't want to hurt hunting, but we also want to preserve the heritage and the the idea of fair chase and all this stuff. So we want to see some stuff in place that's going to, you know, eliminate torturing of animals in this zone and whatnot.
I think anyone that is okay with that is only reacting to anti-hunters. Mm-hmm. Like, so if you were to sit, all the people are like, yeah, I don't have a problem with this. If you were to sit them down in a one-on-one situation and have a normal conversation with them, I'm pretty sure they'd be like, yeah, that's kind of messed up. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times with the way that social media is and just how everything is so reactionary these days, they're most likely reacting to anti-hunters losing their minds over something like this. Yeah. There's no way that you can truly be okay with something like that. Like, it's not the wolf's fault. Right. I mean, like, you can't, like, the wolves aren't like getting together and conspiring, you know, they eat and kill animals. Like, and that's their,
yeah, that's what they do. That's
drive wolf to thing. Survive. That's, yeah. But like, I don't blame the wolves. I don't have a problem with the species. Mm-hmm. I have a people with greenies and environmental activists, you know, who try to govern via the ballot box. I mean, not govern, but manage wildlife via the ballot box versus right. science.
Yeah.
That's, I have a problem with that.
Sure.
And that's probably those people, like, people are so easily manipulated in today's day and age because of social media and how quickly and readily available information is, that's probably a byproduct of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And it's like, for us, you know, the decision was, okay, do we let this die on the vine and hope it doesn't gain national attention? Or do we try to lead from the front, try to steer? I hate the word steer, because steer means it sounds like we're trying to change the reality of it. But we want to lead people into putting it in places so that, you know, because if we don't do it, the anti-hunters are going to do it. And I would rather, you know, rational hunters put guardrails in place that are not going to, you know, hurt hunting and not take away abilities to hunt. But if you leave it in the hands of the non-hunting public or the anti-hunters, it's probably going to go that way. So, you know, for people to get upset with Alpha Wildlife for wanting to be out in front of it and to help put things in place that will protect hunting in the long run is stupid. Like, we got some stupid ass comment from a guy that was like, putting wolves' lives above human life is wrong. By posting this, you've only added fuel to the fire against our little community. Everyone wants quick resolve, yet no one is thinking about the innocent lives this situation is impacting. There are good people in the good position in good positions to handle this situation. Stop bringing national attention to this. You're only harming the innocent at this point. And you may not live here, so you don't know or see the impacts your influence has. If any child or citizen in this community is hurt by this, I'm naming you in a lawsuit. Guess you value wildlife over human life.
You so know, that it's person like, that wrote that the person that wrote that comment has an IQ below room temperature. If a child is harmed, I'm going to name you in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
One, that person has never hired an attorney in their life, I'd be willing to bet. Two, has never been involved in a lawsuit. Three, couldn't afford one if their life depended on it. And four, does not know how the legal process works.
Yeah.
That is a toothless threat made by a moron. That's an idiotic statement, an idiotic threat. That's the state of social media in this country. It's mm-hmm. like, you're mad at an organization that has done a tremendous amount of good for wildlife, a tremendous amount of good. Well, probably one of the most innovative developments in protecting hunting, outdoor conservation, and wildlife in the past decade, in my opinion, what Hal does. And you want to attack them. Let's not forget about the guy, the genesis of this problem, which is the guy that took an injured wolf mm-hmm. into a bar with its mouth taped. Right. I mean this with every fiber in my body. If I saw a person, if I was in a bar in another state where I didn't know anybody, and a person brought an injured animal in with a taped up mouth and was like messing with it, I can guarantee you one thing's going to happen. There will be a physical altercation between me and that individual. I'm not saying I'm going to win. I'm not saying I'm going to lose, but I promise you this, we would get in a fight. And it would be a very, very short conversation. Like, what is this? Oh, this is a wolf I ran over with my snowmobile. Crack, right there, on the spot, without hesitation, I'm hitting the guy. I don't, that things like that infuriate me. Like, they make my blood boil. Like, if you're in a, if he were in a predator zone or whatever it's called, and he ran over and killed a wolf with his snowmobile, I have zero problem with that. I have zero problem with him hitting it with his truck and killing it. I don't have a problem with
that. Yeah, but dispatch it after you've ran it over. Like, you know, if it were a trapper and you trapped an animal, you would kill it immediately. If you were a hunter and you would kill it
out of your way.
Yeah.
Going out of your way to take an injured animal, tape its mouth shut, drive it into town and take it inside of a bar.
And then take pictures with it, video.
Did the bar owner not like what was the bar owner like, oh, this is cool. And I will tell you this, as a person that has been the brunt of an animal rights attack campaign, I promise you this, those people will not stop until they've created havoc for the location, the guy, his family. Like, they don't stop. Like, I've dealt with these people. I'll give you an example. We're in Africa in 2015. It's me, Logan Stark, Aria Gordon, Eli Gordon, a few other people. And Aria, where we were hunting at Sidibe Nikli and in Limpopo, South Africa. And their carrying capacity for giraffes on the property was like, I want to say it was like 22 giraffes is was what their estimated carrying capacity was. And I think they had like 40 giraffes on the property, which is, you know, they have a very specific food source. It was way over what the land could handle. And so the prices tags on these giraffes were pretty low. So Aria ended up shooting a giraffe with my rifle, killed it, big old giraffe, took photos with it, posted it on her social. She ended up going on. She got just mobbed by anti-hunters, the Daily Star in the UK, that one magazine, one newspaper, the front page photo of it got like 35 million views. She ended up going on Piers Morgan and a bunch of other it was brutal. I was not in any photos with her. I didn't comment on any of her photos. I didn't engage, but I was tagged in one of her photos. One of her pictures, okay? I wasn't in it, but my Instagram handle was tagged. The anti-hunters found who my girlfriend was at the time. I lived in Washington State, and she worked for a massive tech company called Concur, which is owned by SIP, which is SIP bought Concur for $10 billion. That tells you how big the company was, okay?
Jesus.
Okay. So SAP bought Concur for $10 billion. All right. So massive company. All right. Huge. And they found her LinkedIn profile, made a fake LinkedIn account for her, and then went on her social media profiles, made a bunch of like fake bestiality and like incestuous images, and then sent out like 500 invites to her LinkedIn network.
Oh, Jesus.
It was like, first of all, you're attacking a person who's never killed an animal in their life because she's the girlfriend of a guy who was on the trip. It's completely insane, dude.
Yeah.
So like, There's a documentary like called Don't Mess with Cats. I don't know if you saw that, but like,
no,
the anti-hunters, like, they will, I'm sure they're after this guy. I'm sure they've blown up his personal life, blown up his family's life, like attack the bar owner, the bar owner's family. Like, those people don't stop. They don't quit. And like, we just, it just things like this, man, it's like you just make us all look bad.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's just, and not, no, hold on. Not only do you make hunters look bad, you make like conservatives look bad. You make country people look bad. You know, I live in Florida. I'm from Georgia, you know, and like Georgia and Florida have more in common with someone in the state of Wyoming than like people from Connecticut and New York. You know what I mean? So you're making us all look bad. And it like it, the reverberations, like things like this motivate people to act against these things. Like there are people now that are more motivated against hunting than there were 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah. 100%. 100%.
So there's no upside to it, man. Like it's like, I'd be like, you know, hope you enjoyed your stupid photo and your moment when some of the people in the bar were laughing at you.
Yeah.
But like you caused a ton of damage to a lot of people, and like you're working against, you're damaging the hard work that a lot of people have done, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. You know, this is the shit that they feed off of. They look for this stuff. This is, you just gave them, like, I almost hoped that we'd find out that he took $1 million bribe in from anti-hunters, because you basically just gave him like all the fuel in the world, you know.
I don't, if someone's like, man, I can't believe he did this. And if you're like, oh yeah, anti-hunter groups, like they placed the guy and paid him $1 million, like, okay, he did it for money.
Right.
But like, if you just did it because you think it makes you look cool or whatever, like, holy cow, man. Oh, wow, dude, it's brutal.
Yeah, and, you know, and to that, the same point that people are like, oh, you know, you're adding fuel to the fire. It's wanting to get out in front of it, because if you think, just like you were saying, that the anti-hunters aren't going to escalate this, aren't going to take this golden goose that you just gave them and run with it and make it an, I mean, look at Cecil the Lion and those type of things like that, or you, like you were just saying about the giraffe, they take those things. They're like, oh, look at this awesome golden opportunity. You know, they're not going to waste a good crisis, right? Like they're going to take it and run with it. This plays right into their hands. And I did a search, you know, before we made the statement, and within 2 days on YouTube, there's probably 10 different videos. I don't know. I haven't done one yet since then, but a couple of days ago before we made a, there were several different YouTube things, and it's not just hunters. It's not hunters talking about it. It's people who are non-hunters talking about it. So it's going to go there. So do you want it to go there from them, or do you want it to go there from us? And that was like, you know, that's why we.
So what was his punishment?
He's only got a 200 so far. There's some talk now that he might lose his hunting privileges, which I hope he does. But the only law, because the way that zone's set up, and the only thing he got, it was a $250 fine for transporting a live wild animal. So there was no torture law. The method of take is not defined in that unit. You basically can, you know.
Well, what about harassment of wildlife?
You could use a slingshot if you wanted to. Well, they don't consider it wildlife because that zone is set up that everything in that zone is vermin. And it's like, it's a border, it's a buffer zone that they put in place to eliminate, I think, for the wolves specifically, not to cross into other states. I think it's like right on the border. I'm not 100% sure about that, so don't take that for
gotcha.
You know.
Yeah, that's absurd, man. That's completely absurd.
Yeah, like, it is. It really is. But anyway, I don't want to waste any more time on this. Let's get to some cool hunting shit, and not this crappy freaking political crap that we're constantly faced with, man.
I know.
Oh man, ever since I've gotten involved in this, like, my quality of life has gone downhill for sure. It has definitely gone.
You got to take breaks off social media. You have to. It's imperative. Like, you have to.
It's killed my social media, actually. Believe it or not.
Well, my main thing is I tell people, don't read comments.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got something that's, like, politically charged or kind of charged, don't read the comments. Because, like, you know, especially, like, with Twitter, like, Elon Musk said that Twitter, he wants Twitter to become the town square.
Yeah.
Like the old days where anyone can go down there and say anything. But the difference is back in the day, the town square, you had to get up off out of the out of your
oh, yeah.
shack or your cabin.
You weren't behind
the town square.
You weren't behind a freaking keyboard hiding. You could say, you didn't get all these keyboard freaking heroes. Dude, I to that point, I posted a video, my son shooting, he's practicing bow fishing in my pool. I've developed a target that you can shoot underwater like a carp that's, you know, hangs close to the bottom of the water and you shoot it with a rubber tipped arrow. And he was doing that and he shot it and he whacked it. And I just posted that little clip. I mean, that reel got like 7 million views. Yeah, it's awesome. But can I tell you the stupid shit that people were saying? Anti-hunting and non-hunting people were like, I heard comments from clean my pool, it's disgusting looking, to stuff that would coaching my son that he's not shooting properly. And then I got anti-hunting type comments. I can't believe you'd kill fish. And then all these fishermen that were like, that's not fishing. Don't say the word bow fishing because that's not fishing. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so, it's a freaking 7-year-old kid.
It's bow fishing. Bow fishing is designed for like invasive species.
Exactly.
No one goes bow fishing for largemouth bass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's it.
Or billfish offshore. Like bow fishing is done for invasive species, carp, grass carp, buffalo carp, stuff like that.
There's some places and some things that you can shoot that are not invasive. But if I shoot a catfish, I'm going to eat it. You know? Like,
for sure.
Catfish is delicious. If I'm going to shoot a tilapia, I'm going to eat it. I mean, that's a vivacious species, but like, I'm going to eat it. Okay. Carp. Yeah, maybe not. Sometimes we'll grind them up.
No, it's fertilizer, man.
We'll turn
carp's great fertilizer.
Well, dogs love them, but you know, yeah, it's like,
sure.
So like in Arizona, there's a law. If you catch a carp on your rod and reel, you're supposed to dispatch it. You're not supposed to catch and release it.
So, no, you toss them up on the bank. Yeah, you have to get rid of them.
Yeah.
They're fantastic fertilizer, man. I haven't done much of the bow fishing. My buddy Chuck Belmore, like, he's a machine. Like, that's his favorite thing in the world to do, I think. JP Morris from Bass Pro, Johnny's son, like, he's obsessed with it. He and Chuck are really good fans. It looks awesome.
It's fun.
The thing that's interesting is, yeah, it's interesting how you shoot, though. Like, you aim super low because the arrow refracts like light does.
Oh, a lot.
You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy, but – most of my stuff though is hunting, obviously, is my primary focus,
right,
as far as recreation. And then like I love, we live in Florida, so we scallop and, you know, free dive for scallops and, you know, from June to late August over in the Bend, like Steinhatchee and Crystal River area.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go down to the Keys every July and do mini season, which is, you know, diving for lobsters, which is a ton of fun. We did it. We went last year. We go every year with my buddy Richard Ryan. But last year we went with Don Trump Jr. and and a bunch of buddies like Davis Boyce from Begara Rifles and some Gary Turner from Tally Rings, and had a blast. And like the thing that like blew me away was like how competent and accomplished Don Trump Jr. is in the water. Like he was the best of us, and there was a couple seals on the boat. You know, like. He's truly remarkable. His son was there with us. So yeah, we had a lot of fun, man. Love doing that. But like, you know, my thing is every year, every fall I shoot one elk, you know, out west. The past 2 years, it was Utah, hunted Deseret last year. And then the year before, and then the year before that, I was down at the Hill Ranch in Southern Colorado.
Oh, wow. That place is amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is like, you know, a lot of people, you know, we're talking about people talking trash online and like, oh, where'd you shoot that? A private ranch? Yes, I did shoot that with a private ranch. I absolutely shot that elk on a big private ranch, you know, and then, you know, but it's interesting. Like I learned more.
Got the must be nice comments.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I've my first elk I killed by myself in Utah, non-resident, over the counter, any elk archery tag by myself. I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, all right, I'm gonna sit on a wallow and I'm gonna pretend that it's just a big deer and I'm gonna shoot it like I would shoot a whitetail. You know, but like, you know, Deseret Hill Ranch. And then the year before I was down in the Wailote in New Mexico. And that was cool. But like, you know, my first four elk were all, you know, public land with a bow. And in the past few years, I've just switched to the rifle just because like I don't have the time to scout. I live in Florida. Like, you know what I mean? Like I live thousands of miles away from, you know, elk hunting. But yeah. Every year I do elk. And then we have a farm in Georgia and hunt primarily whitetail. Most of my hunting is whitetail, and then, you know, turkey hunting. I absolutely love turkey. God, I love turkey hunting.
I was just there in Florida turkey hunting with my son.
Where were you?
We were up by Panama City.
Panhandle.
He had that first. We really only got to hunt for one day because I didn't realize that that youth season is only 3 days, and I kind of screwed that up a little bit in planning wise, but.
I love turkey hunting. We turkey hunted last weekend, and it's one of the best turkey hunts I've ever been on because everything happened the way it's supposed to happen, except the gobblers would not come within range. Like, it was fantastic. Like, we didn't kill a bird, but like everything else about it was flawless. And then obviously, you know, at the farm. Yeah, and then obviously, you know, farm in Georgia. Anytime I see a pig, I'm shooting a pig. I don't care. You know, they're vermin. You have to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. But and then last year I hunted, did whitetail in Kansas, and that was interesting. That's my thing, man. Like, you know, doves at the farm in early season. I do an elk in September every year, and then I start whitetail hunting. You know, and then we go to Africa a lot. We didn't go last summer. And we're not going to go this summer, but we did go, you know, the summer before, and then I've been many years before. I've been over there many times. But yeah, that's like my stuff. And then hunting is more. I enjoy hunting more than fishing, but yeah, I like doing all of it. It's all a lot of fun.
I'm not a big fisherman. I do it because my son loves it, and I loved it as a kid. Don't get me wrong. I grew up on Long Island, so I did quite a bit of fishing, you know, in the bays and offshore and whatnot. When I moved to Arizona 34 years ago, I didn't fish a whole lot here. You know, there's lots of waterways, you know, we did some fishing, but not a whole lot. It was mostly bird and deer hunting. And then that turned into elk hunting and everything else. But so, yeah,
I love saltwater fishing, freshwater fishing. I don't particularly care. I don't care. But I mean, if someone's like, hey, you can't go freshwater fishing anymore, I'd be like, all right. Saltwater, you know, we fished in the Bahamas last year at Harbor Island. That's awesome. And then we fish, you know, over in Steinhatchee, Florida for speckled trout and reds. Ton of fun. I love redfish. I love blue water trolling and all that stuff. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah, we caught a bunch of speckled trout. Not any that were keepers because there was a slot limit, whatever. When we were we were on 30A, so I also, you know, that whole turkey hunt. Beautiful. I said it was also taking my kids and my wife, you know, spring break, whatever. So, but my son and I went fishing a couple of days. I got a buddy of mine that lives over there, and he took us out. We went gar fishing one day, we didn't catch one, and then we were, you know, catching speckleds. Interesting fish, man. It's crazy. Like, you're like, oh, cool, I just caught a trout, and it's got teeth. It's like, you know. It's
nasty teeth. Yeah, they're sharp needles, man.
Yeah, it's nuts. You're like, it's a different, and it's, you know, obviously it's salt water. I guess kind of right where we were fishing, it was almost brackish, but
yeah, the northern Gulf of Mexico, yeah, up on 30A, yeah, it's not a super heavy salt content, but yeah, they got tons of great fishing over there. Florida's a great state. I actually love living here.
Yeah, yeah, no, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law live in Delray Beach. So I pretty much make it to Florida once a year almost. And done quite a bit. I've done iguana hunting there. I've killed deer there, hogs, and, you know, turkey. And actually, I shouldn't say I've killed turkey. I've turkey hunted there. I have yet to kill a turkey there. Yeah, it's a fun place, man. Lots of fishing, lots of opportunity.
Yeah.
You guys are actually this year on the ballot. There's a pro hunting positive thing going on. You're going to, the Florida is going to get the chance to vote to have hunting and fishing as part of the Constitution as a right, the state Constitution. Yep. So
great governor.
Yeah. It's going to be, hopefully it goes through. It's, you know, he is a great governor, but when it comes to wildlife issues, and I don't know this to be true for sure, but from what I understand, his wife is not very pro hunting at all, but he does what's best for the state, which is what we're betting on. So
the catch into clean water and like the Lake Okeechobee and the water releases and the red tide and stuff, mm-hmm. like he's put billions of dollars into cleaning up the waterways in the state of Florida.
Oh, nice.
Like billions. Like he has done a tremendous job of that stuff. And I would say from like a policy standpoint, he is very intelligent with how he approaches all that stuff. So I'm a huge fan of that. If it's like a hunting and outdoor, because that's such a huge part of the state mm-hmm. economy, it's massive. So I'm not concerned about his wife's opinions on hunting at all. Like,
good.
He's not going to make decisions. He's not going to make decisions regarding hunting and fishing in the state of Florida based on like his wife's opinions. Like, I feel quite confident about that.
Nice. Awesome.
Because he does listen to the people of the state, which is freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He seemingly does a lot of things that are what the people want. So.
Yep.
That's
which
good.
Which is super bad.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Well, that's what you're supposed super to do as a freaking politician, right? You know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's lost on most politicians. Like, yeah. I think that a lot of politicians, they're reactionary to like who makes the most noise mm-hmm. versus doing what's right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Why don't you go ahead and, you know what? I don't think you ever got an opportunity. We started talking. Give us a little rundown about yourself real quick, because I don't know if everybody knows who the hell you are yourself.
So I'm a broker of expertise, man. Like I know a lot of people that know a lot of things. Like that's, you know, if you need something done, mm-hmm. you need something fixed, or you know, how do we approach this? So I'm the director of strategic relations for Black Rifle Coffee. I've been with Black Rifle Coffee since the beginning. You know, I was in real estate in the 2000s and made an absolute fortune. And then when the economy crashed in 2008 and the real estate market, you know, went kaput, I lost everything I had. Felt sorry for myself for about 48 hours and realized that was kind of stupid. And, you know, then next thing I know, I'm living and moved from Savannah, Georgia to New York City. And I was going to NYU to get a master's degree in Arabic. While I was in New York, we started a CrossFit apparel company called Tutud, which I sold maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we started that in December of 2010. And then in January of 2011, we started a drink company called Killcliff.
Oh, yeah.
And Killcliff, we sold to a VC firm, venture capital firm in 2015, or sold an interest in it, and then sold the rest of the company to another VC firm out of Colorado in 2000. I think it was like 18, maybe 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. Evan kind of recruited me over to Black Rifle. So I started a consulting company called Digital Mongoose and started working with Black Rifle, as well as several other brands. Kimber was one of my first like big anchor clients. And just, you know, I'm a network guy. I'm a connection guy. I think I find people interesting. I like interacting with people and I like learning about new stuff. And I like making connections with people that know how to make connections. So Digital Mongoose consults for a bunch of companies. I just got back from DC yesterday. I got back from DC on Tuesday. I've been, you know, starting to do some political consulting up there. But, you know, just try to stay busy and make things happen. And I invest in, you know, companies and do a lot of stuff in the crypto space. But like, so I'm a director at Black Rifle. I'm a partner in Killcliff, and then a partner in a company called Outsider with Sam Mackey and Jay Cutler. Sam just retired from the SEAL teams, 20 years in the teams, February the 1st. And Jay Cutler was a quarterback in the NFL yep. for 12 years. And then investor in Protect as well as Figure AI, and then a bunch of other stuff. So
I'm actually doing a podcast with what's his name, Travis. Jesus,
Trevor Thompson.
Travis, yeah, yes, from
Trevor Thompson.
Yeah, Trevor Thompson.
Yeah, yeah,
yep,
yeah. Trevor, yep. Trevor was a SEAL. Trevor's a very close friend of mine. Good dude. Big fan of his. Awesome guy. But yeah, that's kind of what I do, man. Just stay busy constantly. You know, like just always moving. Never sit still.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think most people that are consistently successful in life in general has that same kind of mentality, the go, 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 and kind of always doing something. Sometimes that's to our detriment, you know, but.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can.
I think we die earlier because of the stress that we've induced, but.
Yeah, you don't want to, you know, I'm 48, but, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't want to get older, but I think actually the older I get, the wiser I get. You get more experience, you know, you learn more about yourself. I'm very self-aware. Like I know my strengths and weaknesses, and I don't believe in working on weaknesses, because I think if you're bad at something and you focus on it, you'll get marginally better at best. And you're neglecting the thing that you're really good at. And like, you know, you hear a lot of people say, we've all heard that cliche, find something you love to do and you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
That's the biggest crock of shit.
It is
ever.
Bullshit.
The only people that say that are rich. Poor people don't say that shit. That is something that that is a saying that someone that is already wealthy says. So like my advice to people is find what you're good at and get someone to pay you to do it.
Right.
That's the secret to life, is that, you know, versus like, oh, I love what I do. It's like, yeah, but you know, are you happy in life? You know, but you know, so anyway, yeah, you get older, you know, you kind of get experience. You see, like my thing is like, I tend to focus on like previous mistakes. Like I make mistakes every day, just like everyone else. I think one of the things where I'm different than a lot of people is I don't ever make that same mistake twice.
Yeah.
I go out of my way to never screw up the same way twice, you know? And then like, you know, if you just work hard, save money, you know, then you invest a little bit here and invest a little bit there, and then you lose money, and then you learn like why you lost money, and okay, I don't want to do that again. And then you just kind of get smarter and older and wiser, and you know, find happiness, find where your happiness is, and kind of what I do.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's good, man. It's good. Sounds like a good life, you know, at least from the outside looking in.
It's a busy life, dude. I'm on an airplane once a week, man. Yeah. So, yeah. But I do enjoy that, you know, like the stuff in DC is super exciting. It's new. And the things that get me super fired up, it's not money. I don't work for money. I don't get excited about money. I get excited about opportunities where I can have a positive impact. That's what gets me going. It's like looking and seeing an underperforming asset or an underutilized asset within a company or an organization and saying, hey, why are you guys not doing this? Oh, well, we think that's stupid, or we don't know how, or we've never had success with it. Okay, well, give it to me and let me fix it. I'll make it work for you. So that's kind of, you know, and then like, especially like the Washington stuff, like the DC stuff, like political stuff, like there's just so much stuff going on in DC that just doesn't make sense. Like, you know, you ask, had meetings all day Monday up there, and like, yeah, I asked these organizations and, you know, elected officials and stuff. It's like, hey, can any of you tell me one thing that you're going to do this election cycle that's you're excited about, that's different than you've done in previous election cycles? And they all just kind of sit there. And the only difference is that there's just more money coming in now. And it will continue. So they're like, you know, it's like, oh, so, and I'll answer the question for them. I'll say, well, here's your answer. You have more money now, and you're going to spend more money this cycle than you did the previous cycle. That's all you have. You don't have anything new or effective or well thought out, because everything up there is like super institutionalized, you know, like, so it's an interesting, you know, learning experience, you know, talking to those people. And then you find yourself educating people that are supposed to be like running the country, and you're talking to these people and you're like, you know, like, actually that's a terrible idea. Let me tell you why that's a bad idea. Let me tell you why that's not going to work. That's not the way people think. you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's fun. It's new. It's exciting. It's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Because this is a hunting podcast, and I feel like we've talked about everything adjacent to hunting.
Let me say one more thing about politics.
Sure.
I'll just give you a little couple pieces of data. So if you look at the number of hunting licenses sold in the state of Pennsylvania, it's a million. It's just over a million. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know how many of those hunting license holders aren't registered to vote?
Oh, I know.
614,000.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous, man. So that same thing that you're talking about. So people bitch about wolves in Colorado being reintroduced, right?
Yeah.
They lost when that ballot initiative was in play 4 years ago, whatever it was now. They lost that by less than 1%. And you go back and you look at how many people who are hunters that were not registered to vote, it was double or triple the amount of people they lost that by.
Right.
So
if you can activate 3-5% about it,
if you're bitching about it, you should be you can't be pointing fingers. You should be looking in the mirror and pointing a finger at yourself. You can't, be in the parking lot.
You can't be a passive. Don't be a passenger.
Exactly. That's one of the biggest problems with us as a community, the hunting community. It goes back to how we kind of started this whole thing. You know, we expect and we want things to happen, but nobody's willing to make it happen. Like, nobody gets involved. Nobody rolls up their sleeves. I shouldn't say nobody. Nobody's, that's a freaking broad stroke right there, but a lot of people do not. And it's
a massive amount of people that sit on the sidelines and bitch, rather than get in the game and try to make a difference.
Yeah, well, Halfa Wildlife has had tremendous success, and we've done it with thousands of people. Could you imagine if we had the 15 million people that were hunters in the United States? I mean,
why do you think most? I'll call them southern-minded males. We'll use that term. Why do you think most people aren't registered to vote? This is going to blow you away.
Nah, I'm not even going to take a stab at it. Go ahead, tell us.
They're scared of getting jury duty.
Are you fucking for real?
100%. It's crazy.
Oh, man.
They think they'll get in trouble or something.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Like, it's like, are you serious? I'm 48 years old. I've had jury duty once in my life. So that's one of those things. It's like, that's something that we have to work on as a community. Is we need, if you want to protect hunting, fishing, the Second Amendment, you have to be a participant in the process.
Yeah.
That's like, do you know how many people in other countries would give up a finger or an arm to be able to have free and clear elections, democratic elections like we did?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, hundreds of millions of people.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Billions.
So we here's the deal. We take a lot for granted in this country, and we need to change that. You know? So anyway, I'll shut up about politics and then talk about
some other stuff. Yeah, man. I honestly, I'd love to keep going down this road, but I feel like, let me tell you something that this may or may not blow your mind, to be honest with you, because you're kind of in the know. But I'll do a tactics podcast, let's say, hunting elk or deer or whatever, and it'll get, 15, sometimes 20,000 downloads, okay? Which for me, that's a lot for a guy like myself, right? And if I do something that's politically or conservation-oriented or whatever, sometimes it won't reach 1,000 downloads. And it just like goes to show me like how much people don't give a fuck, And it's like, so it in the last year and a half or so, I've been doing a lot of the conservation talking stuff just because of Halfa Wildlife, and just been, that's what's on my mind. Like, I want to be excited about giving me tactics to hunt elk or sharing stories with me. But right now my mind is so focused on trying to save hunting that it's hard for me to, even think about those things. I always love talking about hunting. It doesn't matter, but I've been doing more of that stuff, and it's killed my podcast numbers you know, I don't rely on it for business or money, so I really don't give a shit. But at the same time, I've been podcasting longer than anybody I know in the hunting space, for sure. You know, I started my podcast in 2004, you know, and I had a 4-year break. So like, you know, 16, 17 years, basically. So, you know, nobody's done it that long. So to see what I built over all this time kind of get diminished because
I think you're looking at it through the wrong lens. So what you're talking about is like you're basing the success of your episodes on what's known as vanity metrics. And vanity metrics is the number of likes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those aren't important. It's not important.
True.
So like if you think about this, if you talk about like what's the desired outcome, like what are you trying to accomplish, you know? So if you do an episode where you talk about conservation and what's going on, you know, in DC or different state governments, and you get 1,000 to 2,000 people, I'll take those 1,000 or 2,000 people over the 20,000 people listening to you talk about hunting tactics.
Right.
Because they're there for a reason.
Right.
They're there because they care about what you care about. If it's important to you, that's all that matters. And like, if you can activate, let's say of those 1,000 to 2,000 people that listen to your conservation episode, 500 act on it, dude, that's a huge win. And always think about this. Mm-hmm. Tell me one person that you know personally that has spoken to 1,000 people at one time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's a big number. It's not a million. It's not Joe Rogan numbers, but no. Like, how would you do if I put you in an auditorium with 1,000 people in front of me?
Yeah. Pretty good. Probably.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of faces.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And I kind of try to look at it through that lens for sure, but it's still it's a little disheartening for me because, like I said, there's so many people that are wanting to hear what I got to say when I'm talking about coyote hunting. And there's not that same amount of people that want to hear about saving hunting. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's not. I mean, the vanity part of it's the numbers that you were talking about, that's important too, because like it makes you feel like less relevant or whatever. But I try not to get too caught up in that. I think what pisses me off more than anything is the fact that we don't have the same passion. Like if everybody had the same passion and spent the same amount of time or even just a fraction of that time and passion that we do trying to figure out where to hang our tree stand, you know, or get better at shooting a bow or whatever the case may be, scouting, if we had put that into being better stewards of hunting, we would be so much further along. It's crazy. It's like, it's almost ridiculous to me. It's like hard for me to, it's like, what we were talking about earlier. It's so outlandish that it's hard to imagine that it's not that way, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. So anyway, yeah. So, all right, let's talk about hunting.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
You know what? At this point, we've been chit-chatting for 50 minutes. Share with me your favorite elk hunting story.
I'm going to go the opposite and tell you my least meaningful elk that I've ever killed.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
It was my biggest elk by 40 inches. It was a 381-inch bull that I killed at the Hill Ranch. Okay. Mm-hmm. So leading up to that, Utah. Do it yourself by a solo with a bow in East Canyon. That was my first. Then I shot one in the Selway Bitterroot public land up in Idaho on horseback. And actually, I'm going to tell you that story. That's okay. So I am from Georgia and my family has farms. My stepfather, who passed away a few years back, was like a big rodeo guy, former world champion saddle bronc rider. My uncle has a degree in animal science from the University of Georgia, horse guy. So I've grown up around, you know, my grandfather was obsessed with cows. He went to Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College. He just liked cows. He liked to look at them. So we've always had cows, you know. It's like a hobby thing, not an income producing, like operational farm, just kind of like a hobby farm. And so I had this little Appaloosa named Apache Boy, and I would ride Apache Boy when I was little with my cousin Will and his horse Ruby. like all over the farm. Like every weekend we'd go from Savannah to Sylvania, Georgia. And I loved it. And then I got thrown one day. I was 12. And this is 1987, 1988. I get tossed off this horse. And I got back on the horse, rode him to the barn, and I did not get on a horse for 31 years. All right. So doing this horseback hunt in Idaho, and I invited my buddy Jamie Shira. And I was like, I'm going to bring Jamie because if I don't have someone there to hold me accountable, I just won't get on the horse and I'll just won't go. I won't do the hunt. Like, I don't care. So he gets there and he's got a video of me walking up and getting on my horse, whose name was Bruce. And Bruce was awesome. And I watched the video and it looked like I rode the day before, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we're going in. It's 12 miles into the backcountry. And he looks back and he goes, how you doing back there? And I was like, dude, I have the amount of regret I have for not getting on a horse for 31 years is killing me right now because this is amazing. And I remember my buddy Crispy, who got blown up in Iraq. He's missing a leg, a below the knee amputee. And one of the ways that they teach amputees to walk on prosthetics is on horseback because a horse has the exact same gait as a human being. So I'm on this horse and I'm thinking about this and I was like, God, this is just amazing. And I remember they gave us a heads up about bees and hornets and yellow jackets and stuff. And in the mountains, they're underground. So the first horse alerts, the second horse irritates, and the third horse gets stung. I was always the third horse. So we're going in and my horse gets stung and he takes off running. And we're on like a super tight trail, but I was fine. I was like, oh, I hope that doesn't happen much more. I didn't like that. So, you know, we get into camp. It's awesome. I think my horse is great. We have a great bond already. It was fantastic. And like the next morning, we're going up on this knob. And all of a sudden, we have a bugle in this meadow beside us. So we jump off our horses, get our bows out, jump into the brush. And I'm sitting there on a knee, like super thick brush. And all of a sudden, I hear this noise coming through the brush. And like, I've hunted with Jamie all over the world. Like, we've hunted together on three different continents. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hunt a ton together. And like, I know what he does. He knows what I do. And I'm like, why in the hell is Jamie walking through the brush? What is he doing? And I look to my right and 6 feet in front of me was a 6x5 bull elk. And his eyes are bloodshot. He's got snot running down his nose. And my right knee is on the ground. I'm on my right knee. My left knee's up. And I'm kind of quartering to say the elk is standing at 230. And my body is angled towards like 1030. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So I was like, what in the world do I do? The elk walked directly in front of me and is staring at me. If he'd have put his head down, his rack would have touched me. And he ripped off a full-fledged bugle in my face. And I thought, what do I do? So I'm still taking a knee. My bow's at my waist, you know, and I draw my bow back. And I'm sitting there and I was like, I have a 74-pound draw at full draw at my waist, not standing up, not locked back with my shoulders. I'm just brute strength holding this bow. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm an idiot. And my thought was like, okay, I just stand up and shoot him in the face and that'll kill him, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, cause like, what, I mean, I've never been in that situation. Like I've got 10,000 thoughts going through my head a second. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to stand up and shoot the elk. And he's right in front of me. And so I start standing up slowly like an idiot. Mm. And he wheels around and runs out into the very center of this meadow. And this meadow was like ferns, dude. It's like shoulder height. All right. Mm. But he stops in this one spot that's like maybe 4 feet wide and 10 feet long and is facing me 33 yards away. And I just thought, I wouldn't want to get shot in the throat or the jugular. And I thought about like Andy Stump and I thought about like Evan Hafer. And Andy was a SEAL. Gold Squad guy, and Evan was, you know, founder of Black Rifle. Evan was a Green Beret, and he worked for the CIA for many years. And I was like, man, you know, I bet like they've shot dudes in the throat, and that's probably, it's really bad. You know, like you don't want to get shot in the throat. I was like, I'm going to shoot him in his neck. You know, and like, you know, and he's facing me. And I was like, actually, you know what? I'm just going to shoot him in his chest, because neck and all that stuff, what a stupid idea, you know? Mm-hmm. And I let it fly, and it hit true, and he wheeled off and ran away. And we tracked him. God, my God, we tracked him forever, and, you know, finally found him. So first morning, it's like 7:15, first day of the hunt, I kill my elk, all right? Mm-hmm. With a bow in public land, like I'm stoked, you know? And then it was a 9-day hunt, and for the next 8 days, I hunted with my buddy Jamie trying to find him an elk. We didn't hear an elk. We didn't see an elk. No bugles. No, the freshest elk shit we saw was like 2 months old, bone dry. But three times a day, I got thrown off that horse because he'd get stung by wasps and stuff. And he'd take off running, and I'd get thrown.
Really? Jesus.
And, dude, like, so, you know, like, I had this irrational fear of horses from my childhood. And I got thrown more in 9 days than I'd been thrown in my entire life combined. And finally, I was so just flustered and just emotionally drained from getting thrown and scared of getting thrown off a horse again. I said, all right, guys, y'all are going to be leaving with a pack train of horses. I'm walking out. They're like, dude, it's 12 miles and we have another day and a half to hunt. I said, I don't care. I'll see you guys at the cabins at the trailhead. Uh-huh. And I walked out 12 miles, day and a half before the hunt was over. I'd had enough.
Yeah.
But I had my elk, and, you know, that's probably one of my favorite elk stories. And then the Hill Ranch one, which was just a 381-inch monstrous elk raking a tree, mm-hmm. you know, shot him at prone from 312 yards from the 300 Win Mag. And it took us like an hour and 45 minutes to get over there and all that stuff. And, you know, biggest elk by far, but all of my other elk, because of the story and the adventure, are way more meaningful, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it had nothing to do with it being like public land, private land. It's just the experience and the process, you know?
Right.
One was super easy. One was super easy. And then one was much more challenging. And we always seem to remember the stuff that's harder in life.
Oh, everything that it's much harder to achieve is always sweeter, you know, when you achieve it.
For sure.
No matter what it is. So, yeah. But yeah, it's funny.
Now, the next day, the second day, the day after I killed that big elk at the Hill Ranch, I shot a 400-pound color-faced black bear. And that's a whole story for another podcast. But that was not easy. And that was very challenging and very scary at the same time. So, you know, just because one thing at a ranch is super easy doesn't mean like the next thing at a game ranch or a private ranch is going to be super easy. So,
yeah.
It's fun, man. Yeah. I love hunting. It's great.
It's funny that was Idaho, because the last time I got thrown from a horse was in Idaho. And it was an area, there's a lot of wolves. And the horse that was in, you know, that's always in the rear, which at this point I was in the rear, they get scared if something comes up from behind them. And one of the mules that we used to pack in got loose and it came running up the trail behind us to catch up with the horses. And, you know, that scared the shit out of my horse. And he went freaking buck wild and threw me off and fucked up my wrist for the rest of the hunt, which kind of sucked, but I was still able to perform when the time came, thank God. But, when you were telling that story, I was like, yeah, me and horses don't go well together. And as a matter of fact, in Idaho, the same thing. Every morning, as we were bear hunting, every evening, we would ride the horses out to, you know, where we were bear hunting. And I got to the point where I was like, fuck it, I'm not riding a horse anymore. I'd rather hike. And I would walk out, you know, the 4 miles or whatever every day because I didn't want to be on a horse anymore.
Horses are beautiful, but not my thing.
No, they're not my thing either. They're not my thing. Well, cool, man. Anyway, well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing some knowledge. So next time I get you on, we'll actually talk about some more hunting stuff. But I appreciate your view and I like your no BS approach to life. So it's
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
All right, buddy.
Bye. Hey, guys. Thanks for checking out the show. Really appreciate you. Keep those reviews and those comments coming. Helps us keep this free. Do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code John Stallone to save 20%, all one word. And check out Howl for Wildlife. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next show.